If you've experienced a loss of motivation, energy, or sex drive, or if you're noticing that you're a little softer around the middle than you used to be, it could be your testosterone levels have dropped. By the time men reach the age of 30, in most cases, their T levels have started to decline, and low T can lead to a loss of muscle mass, depression, lack of energy, and a low sex drive. The good news is now you have your remedy with Test X9. This stuff is the real deal, guys. This formula has 9 clinically proven ingredients to naturally boost your body's own testosterone production. Experience increases in strength, energy, and sex drive, as well as improved mood and well-being. Feedback has been awesome. Guys in their 30s and 40s have reported waking up with the quote-unquote morning wood for the first time since they were teenagers. If you want to take it to the next level, you can maximize your results with the Ultimate Test Stack, which combines the Test X9 with the T-Assist, an estrogen control and liver support blend, and Recovery PM, an amazing sleep aid that has had incredible feedback for helping people to get the best sleep they've ever had without feeling groggy that next day. You'll be amazed with the effect of raising your T levels and improving your sleep will have on your overall performance and well-being. Don't settle for average. Man up at LegacySupps.com. That is LegacySupps.com. And use the promo code Sullivan for an additional 10% off your entire order. That's LegacySupps.com. And use that promo code Sullivan for 10% off your entire order for the best health and workout supplements out there. This is Pro Wrestler approved. Welcome to Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me, of course, the star of the show, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the man behind the NWO, the man behind the 83 weeks of dominance, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing fine. How are you, my friend?
Doing good. Can't complain. A lot of work going on around the house. I know you have the same issue, but a lot of shit going on around the house, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's a money pit.
Yeah, you can say that again, and I had some, when I bought the house, the house wasn't even done, and then you have 15 years later, you want to do some repairs and update the house, and it becomes a money pit.
Yep, unfortunately, yep, always, but... Going to look at the other side of the wrestling business, meaning non-WWE stuff. If you look at AEW right now, the ratings aren't very good, but they're adding in another show. So they're getting a Saturday show now. Plus, they just sold 70,000 tickets at Wembley. How do you kind of explain some of that, like wrestling-wise? Because it's almost like, how do you not do well here, but you do well live at the gate? It's crazy.
Wrestling is really hot. I mean, you see the shirt I get on.
Can you, it's, oh, CC Dub. Yep. Yeah.
They run a town every month. They're running 8 to 10 times a month. Nelio and Dan have very good talent, and Dan Lambert's involved in it. They got Bill Alfonso, they got Gangrel, they got a guy named Damien Fetter. I want you to remember that name, that you heard it from me. He'll be in one of the top matches in 5 or 6 years in WrestleMania. I told Damian Priest when I was at Ring of Honor with him, he would be a big star. They have another guy, Cha-Cha Charlie. He's from Panama or one of the Central American countries. And this guy's got something, especially with the Latino crowd. You can't put your finger on it. They bring in I'm getting the Alzheimer's disease. I hope it's just old times disease. What's Cody's partner at the
QT Marshall.
Boy, is he a good worker. He is an exceptionally good performer. I saw him have a match with a kid that is actually going to be a referee at AEW. And the size difference was probably close to 100 pounds. They had a believable match. So he has them. He has a girl, you know, the Caitlin?
Yeah. Yep.
She's one of the best. I mean, I would love to see a match with her and Blanchett. I mean, she's a fabulous performer, too. Well, anyway, where I was going with this, they run in Hialeah, where they run, it's in an industrial area. It looks like, you know, there's old motorcycle shops, there's car repair shops. To me, it looks like a laundromat, you know what I mean? Trucks coming in and out all night. But they run in a brewery in the back of the brewery where they make the beer. They average 850 people.
Wow, nice.
And then they have another one, town. They run in Kissimmee, and they do well in Kissimmee, like 400 or 500 people. They run in Fort Pierce. Now, Fort Pierce, when Championship Wrestling from Florida, which you know is going to come back, the tapings of the 26th and 27th at the end of the month. Fort Pierce was a very tough town for us back in the day. Now, I don't know if it was because it wasn't that far from Fort Lauderdale, which was a big town for us. It was, if people don't know, Miami's only 25 miles from it, from Fort Lauderdale. West Palm was down the street, so we had West Palm on Monday, Miami Wednesday, Fort Lauderdale Friday. Now, Fort Pierce would be a occasional spot show, and Dusty would go there, Blackjack would go there, Superstar Billy Graham, Blackjack, I mentioned Blackjack, Barry would go there, Ron Bass, Angelo Mosca, Mark Lewin, Rick would defend the title there when he was in for the week. It never really drew. And I think it was because there was so much wrestling around it and the cards were bigger and stacked in those towns that I mentioned. So we never really drew, you know, if we drew 1,000, it was a good house. They weren't hanging from the rafters, right?
Right, right.
they're doing 750 people there. And I asked, you know, I've been there a couple of times. I noticed that there was a lot of people that came every week, but there was a lot, I think 3/4 of the crowd was brand new every week. And I asked, and what it was that's where people got on the cruise ship, and that night they stayed in Fort Pierce. So there was nothing to do. And they advertised in that neighborhood pretty good, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess they got a lot of wrestling fans to come, but they're doing really well. Where I'm going with this, and wrestling being hot, but then I started to read something. Have you ever read the book? I got it right here. Have you ever read the book, National Wrestling Alliance, The Untold Story of the Monopoly by Tim Hornbigger?
Yes, Timmy boy. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he's a great baseball writer too. And it told about we had national TV back as far back as 1946 for a short time. And then by 1948, they got all the glitches out of it. So the Chicago wrestling was sent across the country, whether it was what they call kaleidoscope, where they actually bicycled around on a tape. It was filmed on the TV itself and then sent. I don't know exactly how it worked, but anyway, that covered all of the Northeast and part of California. And then they got Fred Kohler and Barnett. That's where Barnett cut his teeth about being a promoter. And they were on Mondays and Wednesdays. Then the guy that was actually renting the building to them, his name was Leonard Schwartz. Well, he raised the prices so much they went and found other buildings. He became a NWA promoter too in Chicago, and he got Tuesdays and Thursdays. So now you can watch Monday and Wednesday, Barnett and Kohler. Tuesdays and Thursdays, Leonard Schwartz. Then Vince Sr. had wrestling from Hartford, heavyweight championship wrestling from Hartford. They sent that to Chicago, and that was beamed across from the Midwest to the Northeast. Then California wrestling from Hollywood went from the West Coast in most major markets. Then Texas wrestling came upon, and that was ascended. Well, they were drawing huge numbers at first on the television stations, right? But, you know, have you ever seen, it's kind of gone out of style, but you would see ads years ago where it said, as seen on TV.
Oh, yeah.
The little red little thing.
Yep.
Okay. They would do that when they sent the national guys out. Like Paul Bowser, even though he was a member, he had his own world champion, AWA champion. In fact, the NWA let him advertise for Schwartz. There, Luthez was for Kohler and Barnett and Don Eagle, and that was a double cross with Gorgeous George. Don Eagle was the world champion he was the world champion. Think about this. Bowser had all of New England. His champion was with Al Haft in Ohio. He owned San Francisco, put people in San Francisco, but he owned San Francisco and L.A. He also owned Toronto and Montreal. So they got to see two different world champions until Lou came in, you know, did that thing where he unified all the titles. Well, they were doing great business, but then their ratings started to slip, and that's how it disappeared off of national TV. The ratings started to slip. Overexposure. Do you think, you know, we always talk about different reasons why the ratings are down, and I think they have this is an excuse. You can watch it, you know, on any kind of device, right? Streaming, everything else. Do you think there's so much wrestling on TV that it isn't like when there was just the Monday Night Wars where you had to see it? You know, they were the two hottest shows and you had to see it. And people talked about it at the water cooler at work. Now, do you think that maybe there's so much wrestling on TV? And I've asked some friends of mine that what I call casual wrestling fans. They're not the sheet readers. They're not Japanese fans. Do you think there's so much wrestling on TV that some guys, because they're trying to get so many guys over on their TV, that some guys aren't seen enough? What do you correlate that the ratings are down, but 76,000 tickets? I thought that was going to be madness, but then I found out, you know, the guy that does the podcast from England, James?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. He said something that Vince's program is on a cable system. And a lot of people in the UK don't have that cable.
Oh, so you got to pay extra for it.
Yeah. And they have had as low as 5,000 people watching WWE, which doesn't correlate because the houses they draw, right? But he said that that AEW is on a regular station at a pretty good time too. So maybe, you know, that we thought they weren't doing, and good for them. You know, when you go to WrestleMania and you see, what did they have, 88,000 people both each night? And now they got, when it was announced they were going to Wembley, I thought, wow, they're not going to draw about 30,000 people. They got 76,000.
Crazy.
And is the card been announced?
No, nothing.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. So do you
that makes sense, though, about the TV, because I remember years ago, Impact was on a good station at a good time spot, and they used to draw crazy crowds over there, and WWE, you know, wasn't getting the ratings. So, I mean, that makes perfect sense. They're probably on the good TV system over there.
Yeah, and, you know, so in wrestling, I was thinking about this the other day. We protected wrestling and the mystique, whether it was real or not. And, you know, I'm sure Eddie Graham and those promoters are rolling in their graves. You know, it was protected. If you got in a fight in Florida, as long as you won, they picked up the lawsuit. If you lost, you went home and packed your shit and you were gone. Now, I mean, we got The Rock, We got Batista. We got Cena. I was just in Canada last weekend, and Cowboy James Storm, he is just did a movie that Clint Eastwood was the director. And for 8 weeks, he got paid mid seven figures. And now he's got he's going to have a recurring spot on the new, I've never seen it, but Yellowstone seems to be a hot program, right?
Yep.
And they're going to, Costner's leaving, I heard, and then they're going to reboot it, right?
Yep.
He's going to have a recurring thing like this. So look how far wrestling has come to be really mainstream. And we have, I mean, Batista, when he did the last movie, The Onion House, or whatever it was. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yep. I forgot the name, but yeah. Yep.
Yeah. They raved about him. They were talking about him maybe getting up for an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor. And then Cena's just in it, but The Rock is the number one. Maybe this thing about kayfabe and all this, maybe opening the doors, and you and I have talked about this, they've gotten to know the people more, and they're following them more, the wrestlers. They're following the wrestlers more because they know them better. Does that sound logical?
Yeah. Yep, they're becoming, movie stars, basically. Knock at the Cabin, by the way, was the name of that good Batista movie.
What was it called?
Knock at the Cabin.
Yeah, but the one before that had the guy that plays James Bond in it. It had Ed Norton.
Oh, what the heck is the name of that? Let me check.
Seven Layers of...
The Glass Onion. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, yep, yeah, The Glass Onion. Okay.
He was a big... He got great rave reviews. We all know what The Rock's reviews are and how well he's doing. Cena, now James Storm, and good luck to James. I'd like to give him a shout out. He's a great guy. If anybody deserves that kind of break, this guy is a true professional wrestler, too. He looks the part. I saw a little clip of the movie he's doing, Eastwood. The guy's a natural. I could see him being in the same category as Batista. He's muscular, but he isn't over muscular. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He just looks like a badass. I could see him playing a crazy villain. So maybe we're putting too much emphasis on ratings when they're drawing this kind of money.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's almost like people aren't as interested in watching it on TV as they are seeing it in person. And then it's almost like the podcasts, more people listening to it than watching it on TV too. It's weird. Very strange.
Yeah.
It's not like appointment television. You don't need to see it because there's a million other wrestling shows on. It's oversaturated.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. Before you called, and I told you, and the culprit's right laying right over there, she sat my phone as she did something, but the ringer was off.
Yep.
And here I am. I'm watching YouTube, and I'm watching some shoot interviews and old matches and boxing matches, and I'm on my phone looking at the news. I think our attention span is down.
Yep.
But we're going to go to an event, because the other thing I thought about is we were locked in our houses for 2.5 years. There was really no live sporting events. I mean, they put them on with no people in the – what did football have, 5,000 people in the stands?
Yeah, that was crazy. Yep.
Baseball, they cut the season – Now it's like maybe people saying, gee, I want to get the hell out of the house. Oh, this is going to be good. And it's amazing to me because these tickets aren't cheap either. And to,
nope.
to sell 76,000 tickets without them knowing what the card is, it's pretty amazing. And TV knows this. The numbers are down on everything across the board, but wrestling still will draw. Rather than paying, I heard, and I could be wrong, have you heard that on the Steinfeld show, each one of them, and I would say that Larry David would be another one that got it.
Oh, yeah.
Steinfeld, Kramer, George, and Dreyfus each get $1 million for every time that place.
Crazy.
So they're buying a show that probably cost, and I'm sure Larry David's in on that too. So there's $5 million right off the top, and who knows what else. So if you give $50 million or $80 million a year for wrestling, that's going to get the same or better ratings, why wouldn't you go there?
Yeah. Yep. It's just crazy the amount of shows. Like AEW is going to add a show on Saturday nights with CM Punk and I guess Miro and Thunder Rosa. Bill Goldberg is rumored for that. So, I mean, it's just crazy. Like, okay, we're going to have a Saturday night show now. Holy crap. Every night of the week, we're going to have a wrestling show on. It's a lot.
Yeah. And I got to ask you a question because I have no idea. Now, Impact, that yep. is owned by the TV station itself. Am I correct?
Yes. Yep. Yep.
Now, at Impact was originally TNA, right?
Yes.
You know, you look back at TNA's numbers were pretty good. You know, didn't they draw 2 million people?
Yeah, back when Hogan was there. Yeah. Yep.
So how did that fall? I don't think I get access. At one time I did. Isn't that what Impact is on? Access?
Yes, Access TV.
Yeah, I used to get that because they had the Japanese wrestling. I got a new sports package, and I haven't really looked at it, but I didn't see it on there. So, I mean, have they kind of do they tour as much as they used to?
So now they hired Lou DeAngeli, who was actually signed Guy Dudley in ECW. They signed him. He worked for Cirque du Soleil and a bunch of other companies doing like live events. So they hired him, and now they're touring a lot. Australia, Canada a few times, more than they were doing. Kentucky, like North Carolina, St. Louis. Like now they're going all over the place after they hired him. So I guess he's coordinating all these big shows, but they're touring a lot now more than they used to. But they only draw about 100,000 per week on TV.
Wow.
But that's the top-rated show on the network. So it's like the network's not as popular, but they're the only ones that draw for the network, and 100,000, I guess, is they're happy with it.
So maybe that's why I don't get it anymore. Maybe they're, you know, it doesn't make sense to put it on the program that I bought. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yep.
So amazing, amazing. We're at a good time to be a wrestling fan.
Yeah. It to me, it's just crazy because if you really look at it, it's like, okay, Sunday nights, there's wrestling on Monday nights, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday, and Saturday too. Pay-per-views aside, there might have an AEW show. So I was like, holy crap, every night of the week there's wrestling. It's nuts.
I'm waiting for AAA to get a program on.
Do Did you know that Conan recently said, and I actually just interviewed Dorian Roldan, who's the director general for AAA. They're actually trying to get television, and I guess they were not lowballed on the deal, but the deal wasn't what they thought it should be for them. And they basically said, like, oh, you guys got to prove yourself to an American audience. So they didn't get a good money up front. But what they might end up doing is taking a lesser deal, proving themselves, and then getting a bigger deal somewhere else.
Yeah. I've mentioned this to you more than once. Conan does not get the recognition he deserves. I know that I relied on Carlos a lot, because he was the one that told me. Let me give you a little bit of history. When I started wrestling, I was wrestling, they weren't called independents then, right? They were called Outlaw.
Right.
But I used to wrestle in Montreal. That's when the Rougeaus, there was two companies, the Rougeaus and the Vachons had wrestling in Montreal. But on Sunday, there was a gentleman's name was Pat Girard. He wrestled as Pat Curry in Europe. He was a huge star. He used to wrestle 10, 12 times a week in London alone. He had a chauffeured Rolls Royce. But he trained a lot of guys. He trained Ronnie Garvin, Terry Garvin, Pat Patterson, Fernand Fréchette, Gilles Pizon. And it was they allowed him because they had so much respect for him. And I actually started there. Then I wrestled in Brooklyn, 234 Broadway in Williamsboro. I was the only Anglo in the gym. It was Morales would come by and work out once in a while, but they'd run shows and they had Johnny Rods. They had Ramon Perez. They had Isaac Rosario. They had a young Victor Rivera. They had a bunch of guys, and Vince Sr. let them work there. So when I was through wrestling, or if I got in the night before, I would go and see wrestling movies. The Blue Demon, El Santo, Mil Mascaras, a host of others. So I always liked the luchadors. And I was probably, if you hadn't wrestled in Mexico and I'm up in Boston, I don't think many people saw it. And then when I went to Denver, when I first got to WCW, and I saw all the Mexican flags, I was shocked because, you know, I figured it was only in the Southwest, South and Southwest, and California. So I went to Conan and I said, hey, I'd like to bring, first guy he mentioned was Rey Mysterio. And Conan, people forget, Conan was over in Mexico like Hulk Hogan was here. He drew big, big houses. And because of Conan, he opened the door for us, and we got the great cruiserweight. I actually created the cruiserweight. I did away with the junior. And I got to tell you something about that too. I did away with the junior heavyweight title and made it a cruiserweight. Right? I'm watching a fight last night, an old Holyfield fight, where it says cruiserweight champion, and I knew he was, and then they had Slash junior heavyweight champion. So I didn't even realize they still called it junior heavyweight when I had done away with it. So Conan was very instrumental to bring the success of WCW because he brought in people that incest style and introduced it to the United States that people had never seen before.
Yes.
And he didn't get the credit he deserves. A lot of that happens to a lot of guys, I think.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I mean, he played a big role. But today, the topic I wanted to talk about, topic at hand, the Macho Man Randy Savage. Ooh, yeah. We'll really focus on his WCW run because it's a great run, and that's actually where you wrestled him. But where did you meet him first? Where did you meet Macho Man first?
The first time I ever met Randy Savage, I was having breakfast, and either they used to run Hamburg, and what else, where they did the tapings, Reading was, no.
Allentown.
I don't know which one was first. Do you know which one? One was like a Tuesday, and the other one was a Wednesday.
I'm not sure which order, yeah.
Well, I had stayed over, and the hotel I stayed over at, everybody stayed there. And I was sitting down, and Randy walked in with Angelo, and they sat down with Vince. And I guess because Randy and I were the same age, Vince waved me over, introduced me to Randy. Randy was there doing jobs with a mask on because he was playing baseball.
Oh, wow.
Cincinnati Reds. You know the story about him breaking his arm, right?
Yeah, so he's such a nut, taught himself to throw a lefty. Yeah, yep.
10,000 balls a day he threw.
Wow, what a nut.
Yeah, he was really obsessive compulsive. And then later on, they came into Knoxville, you know, that Plan B, right? And that's when the guys from Knoxville broke away from Ronald, and they joined up with the Poffos. And I'm going to an outdoor show, and they're running an outdoor show, and I pull into it, and they were all paranoid, you know, because I had Tony Charles in the car and Les Thornton, you know, I mean, big time shooters. And I think they thought we were trying to break up the show. And I remember Lanny running up to the car going, Savage just bench pressed 405 today. I said, okay. And I explained to them, hey, sorry. I thought, I asked, you know, this is before GPS. I said, I asked someone when the wrestling was and pointed it out. I said, I'm not here to be involved in the show. We just made a mistake. Do you know where we are? Yeah, yeah. 10 minutes down the road, blah, blah, blah. I said, have a nice show. And then later on, maybe 6 months later, I'm at a bodybuilding show. I was the East Tennessee Championships. And I was in the open contest, and Randy was a novice one. And I showed Randy how to paint in his abs. So Randy and I knew each other for a very long time. Yeah. And we became very, very good friends.
Who did better in the competition, you or him?
I was in the open one, which is means that I had qualified for the higher competition. I won that one. I think he played second in the novice.
Wow.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. We didn't compete against each other because I had won a contest. And if you won a contest, you went to the open.
Gotcha.
Well, you placed first, second, or third. So Randy, the next contest, if he entered it, would have been an open. Yeah.
did you run into him like through the years at all? Like, you know, obviously he's in Memphis. I mean, he's going to ICW. He's going to all these different places. Did you run into him before WWF at all or no?
Yeah, I actually worked Memphis when I think I told you the story when Jerry Jarrett broke away from the NWA office.
Yep.
The NWA members were split, like the Sheik sent guys and himself to Nick and Eddie and Watts. And they actually sent Harley to the Memphis show. Harley was on top, and I believe it was Jarrett. Crockett had sent in, or Watts had sent in the Rock and Roll Express. Me and Mike went up there, and as the World Tag Team Champions, and Dusty came up from Florida, and Gerald Briscoe came up. So it was really strange that the NWA had abandoned the lifelong, they were members from 1949, the year after it started. So that was a strange one. But anyway, I had, Randy was on. Then later on, I would go up occasionally and wrestle Memphis. And I met Randy there. Then I met Randy in Portland for a little while. I was working weekends. For a while, I was working San Antonio, Puerto Rico, Florida, and for Mario Savoli at the same time. And I would just go into Puerto Rico for like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, or sometimes on a Thursday. And Randy was over there. And Randy and I hung out together.
Nice. When you look at it though, what did you think of him? Did you think he was like nutty OCD, or did you like him? Did you think like, oh, this, yeah, he's just a wacky guy. I like this guy.
Oh, I really liked Randy. He was a lot smarter than people gave him credit for. His brother, he was a genius, and you know, there's a thin line between being a genius and a madman. And Lanny was a very good guy. He had a great job at WCW. You know, I think he made one TV in 5 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I really liked it that Randy was a loyal guy, because after him and Elizabeth got divorced, he got her a job at WCW. She had gone through another divorce, and Randy made sure that she got a good job. Not that she wouldn't have been hired, but it showed that Randy was a real good guy.
Did you follow when he got to the WWF and saw his ascension? Because obviously he gets there. He's the IC champ. He's the world champ. I mean, he's main event guy. He's basically, you know, 1A to Hogan's 1. You know what I mean? So what did you think about his ascension and rise in the WWF?
I thought it was a little strange this way. No knock on anybody, but you look back, they used the Memphis guys tremendously. I mean, there was the Moondogs, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Randy. Honky.
Yep.
Jimmy Hart. Let's face it, Hulk was there also.
David, Bam 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 at one point, yep.
David Schultz, who was pushed very hard, spent a lot of time with Hogan in Memphis. David's a, I believe he's either Tennessee or Kentucky or Arkansas or Mississippi guy. He was trained by one Herb Welsh, who was an old-time, big-time shooter. So it surprised me, because when I went to Memphis, me and Steve Kern were like traded for Tommy Rich when Tommy went back to Atlanta. And when Steve and I got there, we were kind of horrified because it was completely different than Atlanta and way different than Florida. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They did a lot of comedy spots, but they knew their audience. And Lala was over, like, really, really over. I mean, an incredible record for drawing that he had. And it surprised me that those guys were pushed as hard as they were because they came from Memphis. But the thing that I didn't realize was how close Jarrett was to both Senior and Junior.
Meaning Jerry, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
When you look at Macho Man in that run, to me, he's like the second biggest draw in WWF. Obviously, Hogan's won by a mile, but he's like the number two because they give him the title in 88, and there was no drop-off. I know you still had the Mega Power, still had Hogan and Andre, still, you know, you still were had Hogan, you know, helping, but as champion, there's no drop-off. When it goes from Hogan to Warrior, you see a precipitous drop-off. So to me, it just shows you, it's like, okay, you put Hogan all the way at the top, and you probably put Savage second, right?
Oh, definitely. And like you said, I'm sure if you looked at their books, there were times that Randy either kept it the same, the houses the same and the big markets, or maybe even went up. If it went down, it was very slight and evened out. Well, I'm not going to say that Randy outdrew Hulk, because at that period, no one was going to. But what a great, and I don't think, I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't think a lot of people understood how hard to follow Hulk was. That was following Babe Ruth. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Randy did an incredible job. The people, he worked so hard too. He was a perfectionist. He worked extremely hard.
To me, and I always get Bret Hart a pass because people are like, oh, he's no Hogan. Nobody is. It's like the Bulls stunk after Jordan left. Like,
right.
And not that Bret stunk. Bret was still great. But it's just to the point, it's like, come on. You go from like that tippy top, you can't follow it. You just can't follow it. There's no. But Savage did a great job of maintaining, at least, when he was champ for a year.
I thought he was fabulous. And I thought they could have got more out of they're teaming together and especially them wrestling one another.
Really? You, even more? Because to me, that's probably the best feud ever.
Yeah, I think they could have got a lot more. But, you know, we have heard about the problems, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it was almost like I've said this to you before about, you know, the Peanuts comic book. Lucy, you're going to pull the football away from me. You know, the Thanksgiving one they always used to do.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to pull it from you, Charlie. No, you've done it the last 3 years. You're going to pull it from me. You're paranoid. Goes to kick it. She pulls it. Takes a bump. I think that caused some of Randy's paranoia. If they had been... People don't understand it was a completely different business back then. No guarantees except, what was it, 5 shows a year at $150, right?
Or 10 shows, yeah, something low like that, yeah.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. And so it was a little bit more of being in a shark tank. And there was blood in the water, but Randy brought out the best in Hulk, and I think Hulk brought out the best in Randy. They could have done some long range as well. As you said, they did a great program, but I think it could have even been greater. I mean, they're both creative guys. I don't care what anybody says about Hulk Hogan. He's also pretty smart with finishes. He grew up in Florida seeing the best finishes in the world from Eddie Graham.
Mm-hmm.
He went to the Gulf Coast area where the Fullers were and drew up, like in Dothan, Alabama, I think he drew 20,000 people at a football stadium in Dothan, Alabama, where I bet you at that time, the surrounding area, I was going to say 100, but it couldn't have been more than 150,000. So, I mean, and then the Fullers, you know, the Fullers were from, they were third generation at that time, the grandfather, the father, their father owned, and their grandfather owned a bunch of territories. Their dad owned, at one time, Phoenix. He owned the Gulf Coast area at one time. He owned part of Georgia. He owned part of Florida. In the later years, he tried to run Ohio for a while and did fairly well until he lost some TV stations. So Hulk learned a lot from smart guys. Ronald Fuller was a very, very good booker. Ronald Fuller was a guy that would book 3 or 4 months in advance. And he had programs laid out, and he would go to the guys and say, he was open-minded. He would say, okay, this is where we're going to start. I'm thinking about I want the heel to screw the baby face, but I want the baby face on TV next week to jump the heel and get something back. And he was just very good because he was around his father, but he was around Eddie since he was a kid too, you know, so he's sitting in on those finishes. He was sitting on the long range programs, which I think today a lot of people say, well, you can't do that. I don't understand why you can't. You maybe don't have to book a year out like Eddie would do in Vince Sr. You know, Vince Sr., you've heard stories where he told Billy Graham the day he was going to win the belt and the day he was going to lose it 11 yep. months later.
Yep.
So I don't see why you can't do at least 3 months out. You know, so Hulk was very smart. And then you get Randy, whose dad was a huge star. You're aware of that, right, John?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
I mean,
Angelo Poffo. Yep.
He was the U.S. champion when that meant something. In fact, I believe that's why Vern Gagne didn't win the NWA title. Lou was pissed about that. You know about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they created the U.S. belt for Gagne, and it caused confusion with the people on TV who was the champion. And I think that stuck in Lou's craw, and he didn't give it to Vern, and he ended up giving it to Dick Hutton, who didn't draw but in a few territories. So that belt really meant something. I mean, the night Rogers won the world title from O'Connor, he was the U.S. champion also.
I love it. When you go back with like Hogan and Randy and you're looking at it, okay, so 1994 comes and Hogan's in WCW. He wins the title. He beats Ric Flair at Bash of the Beach 1994. Then Starrcade 94, a few months later, Hogan's feuding with the Butcher and yourself and the Avalanche, the Three Faces of Fear. But Macho Man is going to come in. The infamous story of he calls Vince. He tells him, I'm done. Like, I'm going WCW. But he called him like 3 o'clock in the morning when he was, I guess, half asleep. And said, too bad. That's it. I'm gone. I'm out of here. I don't want to be an ambassador. I don't want to be a commentator. I still have a lot of, you know, fuel left in the tank. So Hogan and him have an on and off relationship. How does Hogan get him in? Are they just he just decided to trust him again and they were friends again in 1994?
Well, business is business with Hogan. He knew that Randy drew money. He knows that he's going into a territory that isn't stacked like he had it. You know, let's not forget when Hogan came into WWE or WWF at the time, right?
Yep.
You had the Iron Sheik, one of the hottest heels. You had Nikolai Volkoff. You had Randy Savage at his height. You had Hogan. You had, weren't the Hearts there about that same time?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You had Roddy Piper. You had Don Morocco. You had Superfly Snooker. You had three of the established all-time, some of the all-time great managers. You had Ricky Martel. You brought in the Junkyard Dog. You had the Briscoes. You had the Funks. Ted DiBiase. It was a main event from top to bottom, I'm sure. Jim Duggan. King Kong Bundy. Andre the Giant. Big John Studd. I mean, I could go on and on and on. But out of all those guys I mentioned, Randy drew, except for maybe Andre, Randy drew the most money, that except for Hogan.
Yep.
So why wouldn't you want that guy on your card?
Yeah, true. And I guess Hogan, like you said, is all about the business, the money aspect. And, you know, he's bringing him in at first to kind of reform the mega powers, if you will, the, you know, the Ultimate Maniacs, the Mega Maniacs, if you will. I mean, he's bringing back his buddy, and he's going to team with him for a while, basically against you, Avalanche, and the Butcher. First match, 125-95, Clash of the Champions, number 30, of course, Las Vegas, Nevada, Caesar's Palace. You and Butcher lose to Hogan and Randy. But is that the process here? Like, he's going to bring him in. They're going to tease that he's a heel at Starrcade, but he turns on you guys, and he's a babyface with Hogan. Hogan wanted to kind of reform the mega powers.
Yeah, and also the guys he was working with were his friends, Brutus, Avalanche,
you,
Ming, you know, but he had worked with them up in WWE, so he felt comfortable with them. He was the one that actually maybe the booker, him and Eric. So, yeah, and then get Randy in there. And, you know, Hogan knew that he needed help to draw because he knew that Vince was going to notch it up a ratch. And at that time, too, he had just come off of, I've mentioned this before, Thunder in Paradise, right? He wasn't as big as he was at one time, and he needed something to deflect from him. And this is how important Randy was. When I worked for a year, the day Hogan came in, it came to my mind I had to turn him heel, right?
Yep.
Maybe not the first day, but in 6 months I saw it. Who did he drop the leg on to turn heel?
The Macho Man, Randy Savage.
It could have been It could have been anybody else, but he knew that was going to get the biggest pop.
Interesting. I agree with him. I totally agree with him.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense. You know, at first, when Savage is there, his big feud was against the Nature Boy Ric Flair, and they had the feud with Angelo Poffo involved. But really, and Miss Elizabeth, too, who turns heel and joins Flair against Savage. But really, that was a major, major feud for Savage for basically a year. I mean, until the NWO kind of arrives. Like, that's the big feud for Savage. And Meltzer has reported, I mean, a lot of people have reported, if you pay attention to the numbers, they were, because Hogan, too, obviously, involved. But, like, WCW, as soon as you get Hogan, obviously you're going to get eyeballs, but like you get Nitro, you start slowly, you know, you start gaining audience, you start taking away from WWF, you know what I mean? You start building your audience. Savage and Flair were doing really well on the house shows and TV ratings wise. So it's like that feud kind of not sparked obviously the NWO, but it kind of helped them in the meantime before the NWO.
John, do you know that we beat them the first?
Yeah. First week.
Yep. And we beat them the first match.
Yep.
That's when I was paying attention, a little attention to the sheets. And that's when Liger was at his zenith in Japan. And I put him with Brian Pillman.
Yes.
I mean, we were off and running. I mean, we didn't continue it, but I remember Paul Heyman saying, when he heard we were going to run against them, he said, not only will Vince beat them, they won't be in business in 6 weeks. So,
wow.
Yeah. I remember that at a press conference. Probably the only time Paul made a mistake. But Randy, and you know, we get back to about Randy throwing the ball, right?
Yep.
His father may still have the Guinness Book of World Records for most sit-ups. Are you aware of that?
Yes, that's right. I did hear. He's like a calisthenics nut or whatever. Yeah, he was doing all the 10,000 sit-ups in the Guinness Book of World Record.
Yeah. Do you know how many he did in an hour? Was it 10,000?
I think it was 10,000 an hour, something like that. Yeah, it was some insane number. Yep.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. But if you look at Savage's run, of course, you and him are about, I'd say, 8 to 10 matches together. Any of them stick out as far as wrestling him and working with him? Obviously, a lot of it's tag matches, six-man tags, different thing like that. Yeah. The infamous Doomsday Cage, World War III. So you guys are in Texas Tornado matches, Lumberjack Strap matches. Anything stick out with you and Macho Man?
Yeah, I was in Chicago, and Randy was billed from Chicago at different times. He was from Chicago. You know that, right? His father was a school teacher, you know, in the Chicago area. Are you aware of that?
No. Mm-mm.
Yeah, his father was a school teacher. That's why I was saying they were smart guys. And his father, obviously, was obsessive, compulsive, do that many sit-ups. And Randy and I were on the semifinal, and I don't know who Hogan was wrestling. Probably Flair. Because Flair was big in Chicago, big everywhere, but big in Chicago. So I said, Randy, are you going to use the elbow? Because that elbow was snug.
Yep.
And when he gave it to you, I wanted to get up, you know. I didn't want to be my head on the mat on my chest. I wanted to be able to go back with it. He said, yeah. I said, okay. 2 minutes later, he said, I'm going to have you kick out of the elbow. And I'm going to go to slam you in small package me. And you're going to beat me. I said, no, Randy, I'm not going to beat you. You are the star. Let's do the right thing. He said, no. He said, you're going to beat me. And we did it And I didn't think he was going to have me kick out. In fact, I was if I moved at all, it was just my leg kicking. He rolled over. And he said, small package. And I small packaged him.
Wow.
So I got back to the dressing room, and I went over. And I said, Randy, I appreciate what you did, but that wasn't the right thing for you. He said, you've done a lot of right things for me. He said, it was time to pay you back.
Wow, what a nice guy. Damn.
Yeah, and I thought, wow. And then we became friends. There was a time in Florida where we were in Disney. And that's only 60 miles from Tampa. So I used to go over Tampa quite a bit after the we get through early in the early evening, 5 o'clock, 4:30. I would go over, and this is when Randy wasn't working. He was training for that Spider-Man movie. So he said, meet me on the causeway. We'll go for a workout and then go for sushi. So I pull over the causeway, and I see a guy with a black cap on backwards. It was, you know, those black caps the guys used to wear in the 90s. You know which one I'm talking about, the leather ones?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And his back was to me, and his had a black T-shirt on. And I didn't think it was Randy, who was so huge.
Yeah, he got ripped.
I said, and big. He probably put on 40 pounds. I said, Randy? He said, yeah. So Randy, I used to be able to really train legs. I was really good at legs. I would do high reps with squats. Like I'd start with 2 1/4 and do 100, 315, 75. So Randy, as competitive he was, jumped in with it, and he was doing it with me. We go out to dinner. I go to pick up the bill. He said, it's been paid already. He treated me incredibly well. Not many people went to his place. He took me to his place. He had a friend there, and they made me a dinner. And he had a beautiful place right on the beach. And Randy really treated me wonderfully. We got along wonderfully. But people could get into Randy's head. And they would play on his head. And I saw him turn on a few people because I had a conversation with him one time. He was handling a friend of his in a completely different light. And I said, Randy, did something go wrong with you two? And he said, yeah, he's been talking about me behind my back. Well, some of the guys from New York would stir him. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And they did it for a nasty rib. And as paranoid as Randy was, it didn't take much to stir it. And I wish in some respects that Randy was, you know, most of those guys had their own dressing room. Randy always had guys in his room. You know what I'm saying? He didn't have the door shut and he had a knock on it. His door was always open for guys. He was very, very he wanted to be one of the guys. He never forgot where he came from. Yet those guys, out of viciousness or being just malicious to pop themselves to get him paranoid, you didn't need to do much, you know what I mean?
Yep.
It was not conducive for Randy. I almost wish that his brother had been on the road with him. Maybe, you know, if you weren't going to use him, he could have been on the road with Randy because he was a calming influence to Randy.
Makes sense, yeah. Yep.
And years later...
You were saying years later as far as on the road with Macho and Lanny?
Yeah, I think... Oh, so years later... Randy got into a argument with one of the couple of the guys. And he came to me and said, hey, nobody's going to watch my back. Will you watch my back? I said, yeah, I'll watch your back. I'll make sure nobody jumps in. He said, I don't want to fight the guy, but... He's been saying some shit about Randy. And I thought that was admirable that he's sticking up for his brother.
Yep.
And nothing ever happened. I got to take the trash out. So nothing ever happened, but it showed you that if Lanny had been on the road... I think it would have been a very good thing for Randy.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I agree. So as far as Randy, WCW, you know, his run there, obviously he would feud with DDP, a part of the NWO. He joined the NWO. They'd have an awesome feud of the year 1997. He'd then go on and you know, feud more with Hulk Hogan, of course. He'd go on and feud with Sting for a little bit. He'd join the NWO Wolfpack. He then kind of did a little bit of a pimp gimmick with the beautiful, gorgeous George and Medusa and Miss Mona, a.k.a. Miss Nitro, a.k.a. Miss WCW. So, you know, he had quite a good run in WCW for sure. But how would you encapsulate the run? Were you happy with the run? He's, you know, it's a 2-time world champion. What do you think of his run in WCW overall?
I thought it was great, but I even think it could have been bigger. I had seen Randy in my head being... You know, when Randy went to them, it kind of tipped the scales. You got Hogan, you got Nash, you got Sixpack, you got Hall. Couldn't Randy have been like a bounty hunter where each side could have vied for his... Hide him as a high gun.
Or yes.
Stay with WCW. I think there might have been underlying circumstances in a little bit of a checkmate, or at least in check. I thought that, too, maybe Randy was influenced by these guys being the cool thing. I think if we made him a bounty hunter, or if he stayed with WCW, his spot would have been better. Do you think I might be right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Could have been, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Because people love to hear Randy rap and talk. He was stuck in a position where there was five or six guys around him all the time. I thought the spotlight should have been on Randy much more than it was. And as time goes by, I'm glad we're doing this episode with Randy. As time goes by, people forget how great Randy was. And Randy had to overcome a lot of obstacles, so I can understand why he was paranoid. So I think if we had kept him, the spotlight on him by himself, it would have been better for Randy and better for the company.
To me, if you're going to put together the perfect wrestler, meaning the guy that could talk, he could wrestle, he has a good look, he has charisma, he has that like quality that you're like, holy shit, that guy, that's Macho Man. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's a star. Like, oh, like, I'm going to put him on Slim Jim. I'm going to put him on commercials. Like, he could be the perfect wrestler to me, because I know Hogan is great and he's got all the charisma in the world, but just throw in the fact that Savage was a better worker, better wrestler in the ring. Savage is the most perfect wrestler. Him and Flair, to me, are the two probably most perfect guys.
And let's not forget, as great as Ricky Steamboat was,
never a heel.
Bobby?
Never a heel.
Never a heel, but as great as he was, his great matches were with guys that were very, very talented, Flair and Randy. Don't they say that that match was the best match ever in WrestleMania?
Yes. Oh, yes. Big time.
So people forget about that. He was a giving guy, too. Like I told you what he did for me. There'd been no Diamond Dallas Page if there was no Randy Savage.
Yep.
He made Page. And he did that very unselfishly. He could have balked, and he might not have said, okay, I'm going to put him over, but we'll do a DQ, or I'll get counted out, or a double count out. He got Paige up and running. I didn't see anybody else really step up to the plate till later on, after Randy had done his. I may be talking out of school here. I know that Nash and Hall helped Paige quite a bit.
Yeah, but DDP says Macho Man above all.
So Macho Man, so there it is. Macho Man was the guy that stepped forward and said, I'll take the first bullet.
He's the man. He was the man. Yep.
Yeah.
And to have like a guy of that prestige, you know, putting you over immediately, even as a fan, I remember back then, as soon as he pinned him at Spring Stampede, I'm like, well, this guy's a main eventer now. You know, because you lose, I mean, you beat Macho Man, you're a main eventer.
Right. Right.
Just to me, amazing wrestler, amazing legacy. Obviously, he passed away this month as well, all the way back about 12 years ago. So
it's been that long.
Yeah. Wow. Yep. RIP Macho Man about 12 years ago now, which is nuts. But yeah, what a obviously died way too soon. What a tragic end, sad end. But man, what a freaking career. To me, behind Hogan, you got to think of him as one of the GOATs. To me, anyway, I know it's people say Steve Austin and Flair, but Savage has got to be in that list, too.
Yeah, and it had to be the best 1-2 punch ever, right?
Yep. I put them one and then Rock Austin, too. Yep.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I'm not going to put Randy and Hogan above Rock and Austin because they brought that back, that company. But a lot of people forget how intricate Randy was to that company. I mean, let me ask you this. Did you ever understand the reason why they took him off and made him a commentator?
No. Nope. They was trying to go for a youth movement, but the guy wrestled for 7 more years after that at a main event level. So, and obviously Vince made a mistake with him and Hogan. I mean, that was apparent. Like, come on, they had so much more left in the tank. And you basically created a monster in WCW by letting Hogan and Savage go there. You almost bankrupted yourself by letting them do that. Crazy. Huge mistake.
Yeah. But, and I got to give Rock and Austin a lot of credit because they brought that back.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And, but it saddens me that people forget Randy, how important he was. And the other one that you said about Randy passing away early, Lanny was the one that really got me. I don't think Lanny had many vices. I don't think.
He was all healthy, healthy, healthy. Yeah.
I don't even think he drank much except when he moved to Panama and he, you know, was drinking a little wine, but, you know, it wasn't that he was guzzling it. He was a health nut, always in slim shape, you know, in the days of guys roided up, he wasn't roided up, except for I heard an interview that he did at one time when they thought he was going to work with Hogan. He worked with Hogan once, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great match. Yep.
Yeah, and boy, that just floored me when he passed away. Did he pass away in New Jersey, John?
New York, yeah. He was somewhere between New York and New Jersey, yeah.
And what happened? Do you know?
No, they said it was congestive heart failure, but I'm not sure. Outside of that, I'm not sure what happened. Because the night before, he was at a Broadway show in New York City, smiling with a lady friend or whoever that were for a friend, whatever. But
yeah,
they're hanging out, and they were smiling, laughing. They went out to eat and everything. And the next morning, he had passed away.
And Randy had heart failure too, right?
Yeah, he had the heart attack and then the car accident. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously, you know, and Angelo lived to be very old, and his wife did too, right?
Yep, yep. Yeah, the mom had lived past the well past Randy, yeah, and she was something like 90 something, yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, none of us are promised tomorrow, you know.
Totally, yeah, totally agree.
Yeah.
And that's a good stopping point for this week. Love the Macho Man, but let's hit the plugs. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at 2-Man Power Trip. Check the website, tmptempire.com. Kevin, what do you got?
Next weekend, I'm going to be in Rheingold, Georgia for Paul Lee. I got a seminar, and I'm also managing Andrew Anderson on that show. And then the following week, I'm down in Pompano Beach for the tapings of the revival of Championship Wrestling from Florida.
Awesome. Awesome stuff. Yeah. Thank you to Kevin, and thank you everybody out there for listening. See you right back here next week for a little Taskmaster Talks with Kevin Sullivan. We'll see you next week, folks.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.